my friend.
Hi.
Okay, I'll start. Welcome to another episode of Case Files.
With Kat.
And Ashley.
Hey.
I was so weird starting it because your name's first, so.
Oh, that's okay.
So.
That's okay.
It's been a day.
It's been a day. It's been a week. It's been a month. It's been a year. Oh my gosh.
This is my favorite part of every week, so I really needed this today.
So. I'm so glad. Well, I also look forward to these Wednesdays. We record on Wednesday to post on Thursday, but you know, I can, the only time I can actually tune everybody else out and just like talk about really shitty things, really, really horrible things. But, you know, to see you and to talk, to answer the questions of the week and all of those things, I just, I always leave feeling better. So even when we talk about really shitty things,
yeah.
Does that make sense? I don't know. Does that make sense?
What are you drinking out of your Jason's Deli cup over there?
What? It's a large. It's to-go cup. No, it's a I went with a vodka tonic with lime juice tonight.
It has been a week.
It has been a week. I needed to numb the pain.
Oh, well, I'm actually drinking a beer. Thanks for asking. So what happened was I originally was planning on having a Martin House Hefeweizen, but I had to leave the house earlier than expected this morning and totally forgot it. So in lieu of that, I have a Carbocktoberfest. Which I know a lot of people don't view Carbock as craft anymore because they got bought out, but whatever. They make really good beers. They have really good food.
But whatever.
I love their outdoor area. It's so pretty, especially in the cooler weather. I don't normally like Oktoberfest beers. They tend to be a little hoppier or a little bitter for me, but this has got a really good like balance. It's really clean. It's really smooth and easy to drink. I love it. It's probably my favorite Oktoberfest that I've tried. It is seasonal. And then the Martin House Hefeweizen is really good. And you know I love Hefeweizen. It's really, really good. So both of this one and the Martin House one are really good if anyone's looking to try a seasonal beer that's kind of ish local.
Yeah, I'm so excited. We're going into October. October is a lot of things for a lot of people. We've got breast cancer awareness. It's Halloween. I know Halloween isn't until the 31st, but it was Halloween
October.
Like September. Yeah, every day of October is Halloween. And then we also have Domestic Violence Awareness Month to look forward to. You are doing an amazing job doing our social media campaigns, getting all of that together for Bay Area Turning Point. We're trying to raise awareness for domestic violence. So thank you. If you haven't checked out Ashley's skills, how can they reach you?
Well, you can go to my Facebook, which is just facebook.com/connecttobesocial. That happens to also be my website, connecttobesocial.com.
We'll see. There you go. Easy.
So, yeah, when I'm not talking about murders and crime and drinking, getting drunk on a Wednesday, I am being kind of professional.
You are. You're doing such a good job, and we're throwing lots at you, and so we appreciate you so much. So thank you. Halloween. We're coming up on Halloween. We're so excited. We have lots of kind of fun things planned for the month. So thanks for tuning in and being here with us once again.
Yes, we have lots of fun things in store for our recordings for the month of October.
So do you want to do question of the week or do you want to do
crime facts first and then we'll do the question of the week.
Okay.
So I actually learned something when I was looking up trivia. There's an actual gene that they say serial killers are more likely to have. It's called the MAOA gene, sometimes also known as the warrior gene. It's a mutation of this gene results in Brunner syndrome, which is a rare genetic disorder associated with a mutation in the MAOA gene. It is characterized by lower than average IQ, problematic impulsive behavior such as pyromania, hypersexuality, violence, sleep disorders, and mood swings. So they have discovered that people with this are more likely to be, like, serial killers tend to have this gene.
Wow.
The average, so
like Ted Bundy have the gene?
I don't know. Well, he was kind of smart though, right? This is typically IQs are around 85 if you have this gene.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And so then the average serial killer IQ is 94.7.
What's like a normal?
Average is 90 to 110, and serial killers tend to be around on average 94.7.
Oh, wow.
A serial killer with an average IQ is more likely to strangle or shoot their victims. Yeah, crazy. What? I don't know. That's so weird. Yeah, but they discovered the serial killers that were, you know, above average, not like on a low scale, like in the 80s or whatever. The ones that were in the high 90s or higher tend to be the ones that strangle or shoot their victims.
Like the butcher baker.
Yeah.
He was pretty smart. I mean.
Yeah. And then this is the last thing because I thought this was interesting. Proportional to population, Alaska is the most popular state among serial killers. More serial killers go there. Yeah. Yeah. And then so following Alaska, these are the top six.
Oh, my God.
Nevada, Florida, California, Washington, Oregon, and Louisiana. Texas was not in the top seven. I was surprised.
That surprises me. A couple of those don't, but a couple of them surprise me. Yeah.
Washington kind of surprises me. Oregon.
Ted Bundy.
Yeah, but still. But anyways, yeah, Alaska is the most popular state among serial killers. And they say probably because of all the wilderness and the darkness for most of the year, stuff like that, you know, just tends to lead to easier, you know, places for them to hide bodies.
Yeah, I guess so. Yeah. I am the dark.
Anyways, that's my crime trivia for the week. I just found those to be really interesting.
Yeah, that's super cool.
Yeah.
So can we deduce that you are doing a serial killer?
I am doing a serial killer. So
do the question of the week.
Okay. The question of the week was, it was a picture, and it says, find your serial killer name using your first letter of your first name and the first letter of your last name. And mine is Back Alley Mangler, so that's super cute.
That is super cute.
I really like some of these other ones. Some of them didn't make sense, but I really like some of these other ones on here. So, but anyways, mine is Back Alley Mangler.
I sound like an appetizer special at Outback Steakhouse. Mine's called the Outback Slicer.
Ooh.
That's if I use the K instead of my first name. What's the B?
Railroad Slicer.
Railroad Slicer? That's not even better.
We'll just say Slasher. We'll just make our own.
I'm so excited to read you the answers because some of them are hysterical. Hilarious. Because there's so much double entendre. Like, there's so much. Yeah. Like, it's really funny.
I'm glad we have such great serial killer names. we are super scary. People would be terrified of us.
Yes.
Yeah. Scary. So this story, the last time I did crime trivia, I mentioned.
Oh, I have one more thing to talk about.
Though. Oh, well, okay.
I have a new cat.
Oh, yes. Talk about your
cat. I got a new kitty. My poor Ella died. And so I missed having a cat so much. So we went yesterday and we got a brand new kitty and he's an all black cat ready for Halloween. And we named him Louis Armstrong. Louis Armstrong. Aww. Clemens. So he's a little
precious.
Louis.
He's really cute, guys.
He's so cute. Pictures. With those ears.
Yeah. Just
little Yoda ears.
He's black. He's a little black kitty.
Oh, he's so cute.
Did you say his name? Too. Did you tell them his name?
Yeah, Louis.
Oh, okay.
Louis Armstrong Clemens.
I was busy talking.
Yeah, you're busy not listening is what's happening.
Listen, your cat is so cute, and I just want the world to understand how cute it is.
Okay, now you may proceed. Okay. That was like, now, I was like, had it like a baby announcement. That's what it felt like.
For the fifth time, when I last did, when I last did some trivia, I mentioned that there were four serial killers that started killing in 1974. Well, when I read that list, there was a name on there that I didn't recognize. So I did some research, and that's who I'm doing tonight.
Ooh.
It's unusual for a number of reasons. One, he started killing in the same year as three other serial killers.
Right.
And because he's not a white male, which is unusual because right. most serial killers are white men. So this story is a little bit different. So I am talking about Carl Eugene Watts. He nicknames himself later on in life as Coral, like coral reef, like not Coral.
Okay.
It doesn't explain why he goes by Coral, but that's what he calls himself. So he was dubbed the Sunday morning slasher.
Oh.
I had never heard of him.
Never.
And so when it was in that trivia, I was like, I have to figure out who this guy is. So he is suspected of having killed more than 100 women. He is African American, and he pretty much exclusively killed young white women. It didn't say that he, you know, it wasn't like, I don't think it was like a race thing. It didn't say he was like, I hate, you know, white people or anything. It was just that just happened to be who he targeted as his victims, I guess. Okay. You know, I didn't really explain. Sure. Anyways, so he was African-American. Most of his victims were young white women. He killed females between the ages of 14 and 44. Other than that, he didn't have any, like, specifics. Like, they weren't all blondes or, like, you know, he didn't really have certain things he looked for. Anyways, he used methods such as strangulation, stabbing, bludgeoning, and drowning.
Bludgeoning. Okay.
Well, we all know I can't speak. So he murdered, like I said, dozens of women, hundreds, according to him, hundreds, between 1974 and 1982.
Oh, my gosh.
And despite this, he wasn't caught for like 8 years, right? So there were several reasons. He would attack them in different jurisdictions and different states. So it wasn't like he was just in one city. He was kind of traveling and he would do it there. And because at that time, I mean, DNA was around, but because he wasn't sexually assaulting the victims, because it wasn't a sexual thing for him, there was no DNA.
Oh my gosh.
So he didn't sexually assault his victims. He would just kill them.
So I wonder what the percentage of serial killers who don't sexually assault their victims to what the ratio is. Cause I can't think of any that aren't somehow sexually assaulted.
I think maybe he assaulted maybe one.
Or after the fact, not even after the fact. Wow.
Yeah. It was like he maybe assaulted, like sexually assaulted one in the beginning or something, but it wasn't his motive. That wasn't his thing. He didn't fantasize about it. Like, that's not why he wanted to kill people. You know, his unlike most serial killers who focused on women, it was pretty much thought that his motive was not sexually motivated. So anyways, it was really hard to find him because he didn't leave DNA. He was not suspected to be involved with any of the murders by the people who knew him. And the police didn't even have him as a suspect until he actually got arrested. So he wasn't even on a suspect list. Like, he got arrested, which I'll explain later, but it wasn't because he was on a list somewhere. It's just because he happened to be arrested. And then it came out that he was, So I'm going to talk a little bit about his background, because he is from Texas. So he was born on November 7th, 1953. I don't know. But interestingly enough, he was born in Fort Hood, And I say interesting enough because, as you know, olives and stuff happening there are soldiers. So, anyway, November 7th, 1953, in Fort Hood, to Richard Eugene Watts and Dorothy Mae Young. His parents divorced 2 years later in 1955, and he started spending a lot of time with his grandmother. His mom moved to Detroit, and so he pretty much just stayed with his grandmother for a really long time. Mm-hmm. And his grandmother told the Houston Chronicle that even as a young child, he enjoyed hunting and skinning rabbits. Now, personally, I don't know why you wouldn't find that strange as a child. Like, I would be like, why is my child skinning rabbits? But whatever, that's what he did. So as a child, he was described as being strange, Avi. Around the age of 12, he claimed that he claimed himself at the age of 12 is when he started to fantasize about torturing and killing girls and young women. Like, he just, at the age of 12, like, where the rest of us were being normal and whatever else, he was out there like, I want to kill women. So during his youth, he started stalking girls, and it's believed that his very first victim was before the age of 15. They couldn't confirm that, but they're pretty sure he killed before he was 15. Yeah.
What? How? Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Right. So
I don't know how they can know that, though.
He confessed to that. But
oh my God,
they couldn't really find a body, and you know, no body, no crime. But he claims that he killed before he was 15. So when he was 13, he infected meningitis, which caused him to be held back in the eighth grade. And when he got to school, he found it really hard to keep up with kids, because like whatever happened when he was infected, it caused him to kind of get this learning disability. And so he started failing. He was held back. He was reading at a third grade level, even though he was 16. Oh, excuse me. So he began suffering from like severe bullying. So the kids at his school like made fun of him because, you know, he was older in school and like, you know, he wasn't where he should be and he couldn't read. And anyways, on June 29th, 1960.
Don't bully people. Don't bully.
People wonder why things happen. On June 29th, 1969, Watts was arrested because I think this is the only time he sexually assaulted someone. He was sexually assaulted a 26-year-old Joan Gabe. When Watts was tried, because he was arrested, they sent him to a Lafayette clinic, which is a mental hospital in Detroit. So according to his psychiatric assessment, Watt was believed to suffer from mild mental retardation with a full IQ of 68 and was said to have a delusional thought process. Though one of the police officers that interrogated him later said that he appeared to be very, very intelligent with an excellent memory. So he's at this clinic. And, like, he's been there, like, 3 months, and he was evaluated and placed on outpatient treatment by a doctor named Dr. Gary Ainsworth. But in his final review of Watts, Dr. Ainsworth stated the patient is a paranoid young man who is struggling for control of strong homicidal impulses. His behavior controls are faulty, and there is a high potential for violent acting out. This individual should be considered dangerous. Why the fuck did you release him? I don't understand. So he was released from the clinic on November 9th, 1969. So remember, he was born in 1953. So, like, he's only, like, 16, 17 at this point. In high school, he was a drug user. He was a loner. He was often getting disciplined by school officials because he had real volatile behavior towards his female classmates. He didn't graduate until he was 19. So during this time, he never attended his outpatient treatment. Like, he went like once or twice, stopped going. They didn't do anything about it.
That was court order though, right?
Yeah, but you know, our justice system. So, He was, despite his poor grades, He did graduate in 1973 and he received a football scholarship to Lane College in Jackson, Tennessee. Now, he was an exceptional football player. And so he went to Lane College. However, when he was there, he got expelled after 3 months because, shocker, he was accused of stalking and assaulting women. They also found out that they thought he was a suspect in a brutal murder of a female student. So they didn't have enough evidence to convict him of that. They couldn't prove he was the one that murdered her, but they were like 99.9% sure. Excuse me. So anyways, at this point, he's kicked out of college. He moves back to Detroit. So then he returns to college. Not Lane College, but he returns. He got accepted into a special scholarship and mentoring program sponsored by Western Michigan University in Kalamazoo. So he, prior to attending this program, he is again evaluated, by this outpatient facility, where it was determined that he was still a danger and had strong impulses to beat up women. Yet due to the right of confidentiality policies, they could not tell authorities or the college he was attending. So basically, because of HIPAA, these people could not tell the authorities or the college or the women at the college he was attending that he was a danger to them. So he just kept going to college. Yes.
Wow.
So
that's all kinds of wrong.
Yeah. I need a drink. I mean,
Kevin.
Oh, yeah. So his official career as a serial killer began when he was 20 years old in 1974. On October 25th, 1974, Lenore Knicksky answered her door and was attacked by a man who said he was looking for Charles. She fought back and survived. So she's like one of the only survivors. So on October 30th, Gloria Steele, who was 19, was found dead with 33 fucking stab wounds to her chest. 33. A witness reported that he had seen like a man stalking out in front of this woman's complex, claiming to looking for Charles. Diane Williams reported being attacked on November 12th under the same circumstances. She survived and managed to see the attacker's car and make a police report. So Watts was...
Oh my God. Yeah. So like, if it weren't for that.
So, yeah, but that's not what, like, that was in 1974. He kept killing all the way until 1980. Right.
Oh my gosh. Yeah,
so he was picked out in a lineup by Lenore and Diane and was arrested on assault and battery charges. At that point, he admitted to attacking 15 females, but refused to talk about the Steele murder where he stabbed her 33 times.
Oh, my God.
So his attorney arranged for him to commit himself into the Kalamazoo State Hospital. The hospital psychiatrist investigated his background and learned about his previous, being institutionalized before. And Watts was said to have possibly killed two women by choking them. He diagnosed Watts at this point with antisocial personality disorder. So... Prior to the trial for the attack on these two women, Lenore and Diane, he had a court-ordered evaluation at the Center for Forensic Psychiatry in Ann Arbor. The examining doctor described Watts as dangerous and felt he would more than likely attack again and was found competent to stand trial. Coral, as he now calls himself, okay? So,
oh my gosh.
Yes. So he starts calling himself Coral in 1974, and he goes on trial, he gets on the stand, he pleads no contest, and you're gonna love this.
I bet I'm not.
He received a one-year sentence on the assault and battery charges, but was never charged in the murder of Steele. And in June of 1976, he was out of jail and back home in Detroit with his mother. So he stabbed someone 33 times and serves a year.
What the fuck?
Ann Harbor is 40 miles west of Detroit in the home of University of Michigan, which is where he's living in Detroit. In April of 1980, Ann Arbor police were called to the home of 17-year-old Shirley Small. She had been attacked and reportedly cut with an instrument resembling a scalpel.
Oh my God.
She ended up bleeding to death on the sidewalk. Like, she was attacked on the sidewalk and she collapsed and she bled out. So, excuse me, I'm so burpy. Glenda, I'm so sorry, guys. I don't know what's going on.
Thank you, listeners, if you haven't left us yet.
Glenda Richmond was 26, was the next victim. She was found by her doorway, dead from over 28 stab wounds. Rebecca Greer was 20.
Oh, my God.
And was next. This was, like, rapid. After he got released from jail and went back, it was, like, rapid, like, killings. She died.
But it's all the same. How did they have any doubt that it was him?
Fuck if I know. Rebecca Greer was 20 and was next. She died outside of her door after being stabbed 54 MFN times. So at this point, they're like kind of suspect, right? So a task force is formed and it's led by Detective Paul Button. And he was, they like hired him to investigate the murders of these women. All of these murders occurred within 5 months.
Oh my God.
The task force was dealing with no evidence, no witnesses, no suspects, even though I don't understand how they don't have any suspects. But by this time, Watt was working with his stepfather at a trucking company, had a child, and met a woman who he married. Okay? So he's on a trucking company that travels across state lines in the truck. In October of 1979, he was arrested for, like, kind of sneaking around in a Southfield, Detroit suburb. The charges were later dropped, though. Investigators did note, however, that during the previous year, five women in the same area were assaulted on separate occasions with similar circumstances. None were killed, nor could any of them identify their attacker, so they couldn't, like, pin it on him because they weren't murdered and they didn't see their attacker. Oh, so they don't know if it was him or someone else. So by 1979 and 1980, attacks on women in this area became more frequent and more violent in similar style. Okay, so I'm just going to read this list real quick. October 8th, 1979, Peggy, 22, strangled in Detroit. October 31st, 1979, G.N. Klein, 44, stabbed to death in Michigan. March 11th, 1980, Hazel, 23, strangled, Detroit. March 31st, Denise Dunmore, 23, also strangled in Detroit. April 20th, Shirley Small, 17. She was the one that was stabbed in Ann Arbor. May 31st was Linda, who was strangled. 1980 was Glenda, 26, who was stabbed. And September 14th, 1980, was a lady named Rebecca, who was also stabbed. So by May 1980, Watts was divorced from his wife. His wife stated that it was due to his strange behavior, which included his habit of leaving their house for hours immediately after they engaged in sex. So they would have sex, and then he would, like, peace out, like, immediately. Just, like, leave the house for hours and not tell her where he was going. So he never explains where he went, by the way. Like, I don't know if they didn't ask him or what, but, yeah, they never explained it. He just...
I would, like, that would happen once.
Like, I mean, I would be curious. I'd be like, so, where are you going? Or I'd follow him. Like,
you're not leaving? What am I?
It's fucking weird. Like, who does that anyways?
Who does
it's not
that?
Fucking tenders. Like, rude. Anyways. So, in July 1980, I got sidetracked by this whole engaged in sex thing. Within months, attacks in neighboring Wisteria, Ontario started being reported as the same nature as those that had been started committing in Ann Arbor and Detroit. And in July of 1980, in Windsor, Irene, who was 22, was attacked but lived after having her throat slashed. Sandra, who was 20, lived through being stabbed from behind.
Oh, Mary, God.
Mary Angus was 30, also of Windsor, and received an attack by screaming when she realized she was being followed. She did pick Watts out of a photo lineup, but was unable to say for sure that the attacker was him. So he did not get arrested because she couldn't confirm that that for sure was who attacked her. So when they pulled, so detectives discovered that Watts' car was recorded as leaving Windsor for Detroit after all of these attacks. So now he becomes a suspect. After all of this, he finally becomes a suspect. So on November 15th, 1980, an Ann Arbor woman contacted police after she became frightened when she discovered that a man was following her. The woman hid in a doorway, and the police observed their suspect as frantically searching for her. When they pulled the man over in his car, he was identified as Coral Watts. Inside the car, they found screwdrivers, wood filing tools, but the most important discovery was a book that had Rebecca Huff's name on it. Now, Rebecca Huff was the murder was the woman who got murdered in September 14th, 1980. So he had a book with her name on it. So how would he have that?
And I mean,
he was the one that killed her. So in late January 1981, he was brought in on a warrant to give a blood sample. So mind you, he's free between the time he got pulled over in November 1980 into January 1981, where he comes and gives a blood sample. So the detective took this opportunity to talk to Watts, but the interview ended without any confession, and the blood test failed to link him to any of the crimes. By that spring, Coral had enough of this detective and his task force and moved to Columbus, Texas, where he found work at an oil company. Houston, which was 70 miles away, and Watts was only 70 miles away, and Watts began spending his weekends cruising the city.
It's a big city. Where was he cruising?
Yeah, Montrose, Westheimer. I don't know. That's where I
like Richmond.
I'm not a serial killer though. So
I don't know. I don't know where I would
go. So this detective forwarded Watts' file to the Houston police, who were able to locate Watts, but unable to find any evidence linking him to any crime in Houston.
Wow.
You know, he's just out killing people left and right. So September 5th, 1981, Lillian Tilly was attacked at her Arlington apartment and drowned. Later that same month, Elizabeth Montgomery, 25, died after being stabbed in the chest while out walking her dogs. And shortly after, Susan, who was 21, was also attacked and murdered as she got out of her car at her home.
I mean, May 23rd, it's all the same.
All the same. But, you know, whatever. Like, you know, the justice system.
They didn't have what we have now. They really didn't. I mean, that's one thing. They didn't have the DNA kind of stuff. They were just doing,
I mean,
like,
he wasn't
blood
leaving
type.
DNA. He only sexually assaulted the first one. Or he tried to sexually assault the first one, so.
He never cut himself. There was always this, just one person's blood. Wow. Yep. Wow.
He was, I guess, very efficient very at what neat. He did. I don't know. On May 23rd, 1982, he attacked roommates Lori Lister and Melinda Aguilar, tied them up, and then attempted to drown Lister in the apartment bathtub. This is where I was talking about where he got caught. So Melinda was able to escape by jumping headfirst off of her balcony. Lister was saved by a neighbor, and Watts was caught and arrested. That day that he was arrested, the body of Michelle Madej was found that same day, drowned in her bathtub in a very close apartment to these two roommates. So in the interrogation, Watts refused to talk. He wouldn't admit to anything. He didn't want to talk to nobody. And then at the time, the Harris County Assistant District Attorney was Ira Jones. And she made a deal with Watt in order to get him to confess. So incredibly, because why not, he agreed to they agreed to give him immunity to the charge of murder if he would agree to confess to the rest of the murders. So I don't know if they were like, I don't get that. But yeah, it said they would give him immunity to the charge of that murder if he would agree to confess to his other murders, because Jones was hoping to bring closure to the families of some 50 unsolved murders of women in the Houston area.
Wow.
So because of this deal, Coral eventually admitted to attacking 19 women, 13 of which he confessed to murdering. This is just for Houston. Attacking 19 women, 13 of which he confessed to murdering. But he then confessed to a total of murdering 18 women. But then he later confessed to a number of women and killing them at some point that he doesn't remember. And then by the time everything was said and done, Watts admitted to an additional 80 murders in Michigan and Canada.
What?
So he admitted to killing like over 100 women. Between what he said he killed in Houston and then Michigan and Canada, the total came out to be like 110, 115, some crazy number like that. I lost because he confesses to different things, but by the end of it, he confessed to over 100. So but even though he confessed to killing these women, he refused to give details because he did not have an immunity agreement for those murders. So he pled guilty to one count of burglary with intent to kill. That's what he pled to. Not murders, burglary. The judge, Shaver, decided that the water in the bathtub could be constituted as a deadly weapon. Sorry. So the judge said that the water in the bathtub could be considered a deadly weapon because he was trying to drown her.
It killed her.
And so which would result in the parole board not being able to count Watts' good conduct time when determining his parole eligibility. So on September 3rd, 1982, Watts was sentenced to 60 years in prison. And in 1987, after a failed attempt to escape prison by slipping through the bars. 60 years. Because he only really got charged for that last murder with the bathtub. Because even though he confessed all these murders, they couldn't, like, prove that it was him.
Sure.
So, in 1987, he tried to escape. He tried to slip through the bars. I don't know what the hell he thought he was going to do. But then he decided to begin appealing his sentence. But his appeal lacked the support of his attorney. His own attorney was like, no. So in October of 19,
like, bitch, you guilty.
Yeah. So in October of 1987,
oh my God.
Unrelated to any of Watts' appeals, the court decided that the criminals must be told that a deadly weapon finding may occur during their indictment, and a fail to do so violates the criminal rights.
What?
So they, that was
because they found the water to be a deadly weapon.
Because they didn't tell him when he was arrested that the water was a deadly weapon. So in 1989, the Texas Court of Criminal Appeals decided that because the judge failed to inform Coral that the bathtub water could be deemed as a lethal weapon, that he would not be required to serve his entire sentence. So now Watts was eligible for retroactive good time earned, equaling 3 days for every 1 day served.
Oh my gosh.
Would have meant he would have been released from prison on May 9th, 2006. However, he did not get released because in 2004, Mike Cox, which was a Michigan attorney general, asked on national television for anyone to come forward with any information on any of the murders that Watt was involved in to keep him from getting out of prison. So at this point, some people come forward. Joseph Foy, which was a resident of Westland, Michigan, came forward stating that he had noticed a man that fit Watts' description to a T the day that Helen Dutcher, who was 25, was brutally stabbed and died on December 1st, 1979. Joseph stated that he could easily identify Watts solely on his eyes, and he would go on to describe Watts' eyes as evil with no emotion at all.
Oh my gosh.
So even though Watts had immunity over the 12 killings he committed in Texas, 12 killings that they could prove in Texas. He did not have immunity in Michigan. So they sent him to trial in Michigan in 2004. And the local law enforcement officials began or asked the trial judge if it was okay to allow his Texas murder confessions to be brought to evidence for this trial. And the judge allowed it. So Watts then quickly began, he got charged with the murder of Helen Dutcher on November 17, 2004. A jury in Michigan found him guilty of murdering her based on the eyewitness testimony of Joseph Foy. So then on December 7, 2004, he receives a life sentence in prison. Just 2 days after his sentencing, the state of Michigan would start the motions for the murder of Gloria Steele, who was the student he killed in 1974 by stabbing her 33 times. Right. So the trial for her started on July 25th, 2007 in Michigan. Closing arguments were heard the very next day on July 26th, 2007.
What?
And on the next day, the jury determined that Coral Watts was indeed guilty in her case, and he would then receive yet another life sentence on September 13th, 2007. So that would be great, except for he would ultimately die from prostate cancer on September 21st, 2007, less than 10 days after he received his life in prison
sentence. Shut up. Yep. Shut up.
He was sentenced to life in prison on September 13th, 2007, and he died from cancer on September 21st, 2007. So he essentially didn't really spend any time in prison. He spent a few years, but not many. Because he died in a hospital.
I know it just makes me sound like an awful person, but I bet it didn't make a single family member feel good that he died.
Mm-hmm. Nope.
Because he didn't pay.
And it's just crazy. Like, there were so many chances to stop him.
Yeah.
And arrest him. And they just let him go. And I don't understand the outpatient thing. Like, if the doctor who is in charge of him says he's dangerous, can't control his impulses, and, like, has a high potential for violence, why are you letting him out? I don't understand.
I don't understand that either.
It makes me mad. Like, I understand it was, like, a different time, but that aside, like, people should have still been held accountable for the shit they were doing. So, yeah, he killed from, essentially, on record, from 1974 to 1982, even though he claims he started before that at the age of 15. So, that is my story of Coral Watts. Oh, so, the Sunday Morning Slasher name. I looked high and low for why the hell he got this name, and I could only find one source that kind of mentioned it, which was because on the day that he got caught, where he tried to kill those roommates, it was a Sunday morning. And so...
But nobody else was on a Sunday?
I don't know. I looked everywhere. I tried to find... I did all kinds of searches. Why is he called the Sunday Morning Slasher? How did the Sunday Morning Slasher get his name? Why is Carl Watts called the Sunday Morning Slasher? I cannot find anything about it. Like, nothing.
Why did he call himself Coral?
He just started calling himself Coral. He did not call himself the Sunday Morning Slasher. That was the legitimate name they gave him. I just don't know why. Other than the one little blurb I found on some website about it, where it said that he was caught on a Sunday morning trying to kill those roommates. That's the only... So if anyone out there can figure out why he is called that, please message me and enlighten me, because I searched for days and I actually had two other people trying to find it and no one could find it. So I don't know why he's called that, other than May 23rd, 1982 was a Sunday. That's when he tried to kill those roommates and that's when he got arrested. So
Sunday, bloody Sunday. Yeah, I don't know. That's really strange. I bet he was like, man, I did everything on a Friday.
Yeah, I don't know.
He's like, so, Saturday was my preferred day. I don't know, you know.
Yeah, so.
Wow, that's crazy. I had never heard of him.
I've never heard of him either, but.
He was in Texas, in Houston, no less.
He was born in Texas, and then he moved to Detroit and came back and started. Maybe it's just, I don't know what's in the water at Fort Hood, but obviously something. So.
Something's going on at Fort Hood. That's for damn sure. I sounded really Texan right there.
You sure did.
Damn sure. I can't
we
even.
We should start doing every episode like this.
I can't even pretend to do a Texan accent. I'm horrible at it.
I mean, I used to have a real bad accent.
I
don't think that's a bad thing.
I just.
To be horrible at it.
It's okay to have an accent. I just don't have one. And so if I all of a sudden, if it pops out of my mouth, I don't know.
Out of my mouth.
Okay,
wow,
so
we've
do
lost
you,
everyone for sure
we
now.
We certainly did. So do you want to hear the question of the week?
Yes, love to hear the answers.
All
yes,
right.
Please.
Okay, so we're going to start on our page. RC says, ice truck pickler.
I don't know what that is, but I loved it when I read it.
I totally don't know what that is. Glenn says, meat locker chef. That's really funny. The other Ashley says back alley asphyxiator.
I liked hers though. I liked hers though.
It's pretty funny. I know. So Stevie says if I use my maiden name, it's garage sale tickler. But if I use the married name, it's garage sale chomper. Either one is actually pretty funny, Stevie. Sarah says garage sale stabber.
Oh.
Robert says ice truck collector. So is this my new hobby? Sounds expensive. Totally. Joshua says boxcar asphyxiator. Bodies found strangled in boxcars across the country. Police are still baffled about how the bodies get there and which stop they get on.
I like that's that really he told funny. A story to his.
Yeah, totally. He committed. Heather, I guess. Flophouse chef.
That's my friend. Sounds... Yeah, I love it. That's funny.
That sounds so wrong. I don't know. I agree with her. She says, LOL, WTF.
I feel that way about most of the
Jessie.
Answers. Jesse. I said I feel that way about most of the answers.
I know. Jesse says, I always get the lame names. Boxcar keeper. Am I like the lame boxcar child they left out of the books? Neva says, conservatory killer. Ooh, that's a good one. Michelle says, playground smasher. That just sounds like a bully. Like... Nell says boxcar slasher. Sounds legit. Yeah, it does sound legit. It sounds pretty good. All right, so let me go home. Sorry, gotta go to my page now.
Your page always has really good answers.
I can always count on them. Okay. All right, here we go. Ooh, lots of comments. Sorry. The Uptown Stabber, Chuck. Sounds fancy. Ariel says, back alley stranger.
Oh.
Oh, that sounds... It's a good one. It's a good one. Jeannie says, the boxcar killer. Has a certain ring to it. And I told her next title of a book. And she said it could be. She's an author.
Oh, okay.
Autumn says, back alley boiler. Just... I don't know. It makes you think of like a boil.
Yeah.
Adam says back alley chomper. That's so wrong. I said, but oh so right. David says Bay City Smasher can be interpreted in a completely different context. Absolutely. Leanne says Watchtower Diner, which just sounds like a restaurant to me. Chris says, Uptown Asphyxiator. Sounds classy. Misty says, Playground Tickler? I feel like this would be something other than a killer. another Boxcar Chomper, Uptown Boiler. The back alley tickler doesn't sound like a serial killer. That's Avi got that. Sydney got the Uptown Boiler. Sorry. Jeanette says boxcar strangler, and then she put like like a train gif on there. Amy says back alley pickle. That just sounds like a position. Tiffany says a lot of these do. Yeah. You know? Tiffany says box factory tickler. I don't know.
You guys are some weird serial killers, is all I got.
I know. And then Michelle says playground disemboweler. Wah-ah. So those are some good ones. All right, you guys. Way to come through.
Yeah.
Way to come through for your girl.
Those are good answers. I love it.
Just loving it. Oh, I needed that laugh. I needed that. So next week we are officially into the month of Halloween.
Yes.
So we'll begin our stories, creepy stories, and really interesting things. And so we hope you join us again next week. Until then, make sure that you like us, subscribe, smash that subscribe button.
We're on all of the streaming platforms, even Amazon Music now.
Ooh. And, you know, if you have an idea for a story, send it to us any which way. Mm-hmm. I don't accept carrier pigeons, but I think other ways are legit.
Ashley will accept carrier pigeons.
I don't know how to, like, read smoke signals, so don't do that. But, like...
Yeah, I don't go outside, you know. So I wouldn't see a smoke signal. Pretty indoorsy types person.
Anyway, well, we love you guys. You know, get those Halloween decorations out.
Yes.
We may not be trick or treating, but I still want to see some spooky. My next door neighbors already are.
Speak for yourself, woman. I am trick or treating all day long.
In your house? In your
everywhere.
House? So my next door neighbors did an amazing job in their yard. It awesome. Already is like totally done up. Yeah. It's great. It looks spooky. The kids love it.
Yeah, there's a bunch of people. And then there's also a car wash on 96 that has transformed their car wash into a haunted thing for kids.
That's great.
It's over
yeah,
there, 96 we, and 45.
That's awesome. I think we should do drive-through haunted houses. Yeah. I think that's great.
People in my neighborhood are still trick-or-treating, but I won't be home. Ashley will not be
well. Y'all be safe out there, and we will see you next week. Make sure to like, subscribe, review, rate. It helps us. And we'll see you next week. Bye. Bye.